freight efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rosenfrenz.
In episode 88, we're joined by Henrik Holland, global head of Prologis Mobility, where he talks about how he views the current pace of electric vehicle deployment and the importance of engaging all stakeholders early in the electrification process. He also shares how his previous jobs prepared him for the role he has today, explains how Prologis operates, and shares his thoughts on the electric vehicle working group that we both serve on. Today we have joining us Henrik Holland, global head of Prologis Mobility. And Henrik, I'm really thrilled to talk to you today. You come from a different stakeholder group of NACFIs, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Likewise, Mike. Thank you for having me. It's always great to talk to you. I always learn something new, so I'm sure that won't be different today. I'm very excited to be here.
I always start by challenging both of us to remember when we became friends. So Henrik, you remember, what was our first meeting that led us to become friends? Do you remember?
It feels like, Mike, we've known each other for ages, but I think that's partially because so much has happened and we've had so much interaction over the past, say, year and a half, 2 years or so. I think it was somewhere in 2023. It was a panel somewhere, I think.
That's kind of a common thing. You know, we met at a show, but neither one of us can remember which one. It's a fast-paced world that we're in right now as we're trying to figure out, you know, where electrification, you know, where and with what applications and in what kind of facilities. And, you know, we're just really running fast to figure it out. In the short amount of time we've known each other, you know, you were a participant with us in Run on Less Electric Depot with a few of your sites being involved. We were together in Queens. And then, you know, you're now helping NACFI as a sponsor and you joined the White House. We're on an EV working group together. So we got a lot to talk about here. How do you feel about the current pace of things? Are we doing a lot and not getting a lot done? Are we treading water poorly, or are we really making some progress? I mean, how do you feel about battery electric vehicles, trucks right now?
Yeah. So, Mike, I think and I hope that you've gotten to know me as a little bit of an optimist. So I think we are doing a lot as an industry as a whole. When you're doing something new, as an individual, as a company, as an industry, it's hard, right? And there's, in any given week, you know, I could think about, there's a lot of challenges that we face, right? And it's often feels like there's more challenges than that things are going well. But I think in general, I think we're doing a lot and we're making a lot of really good progress across the board. And I'm thinking about everything all the way from the introduction of really good new vehicle technology. I think if you look at the vehicle space, so much has happened over the past, you know, 2-3 years. So many new, like really good vehicles have come to market. If you look at like the range of, you know, the class eights that have been coming out, the charging speeds, we've gone from 150 kW to 250 on models. We've gone from 100 mile range to like 200, 250. And more if you think about the Tesla Semi in the medium duty space, product has become a lot more available. I mean, there's a little bit in the market now about a challenge to get trucks, but I think if you plan well enough, I think the vehicle availability is there. On the infrastructure side, lots of great progress. I mean, the Run on Less showcase, of course, you know, really demonstrates what can be done. And I always like to say, look, infrastructure is a problem. Yes, it is hard. But I always like to say, hey, if we have enough lead time, and if like we as an infrastructure service provider, we'll get into some of that. Like if we have enough time, if we're early enough in the conversation with our customers on fleet electrification, we can get ready and infrastructure doesn't have to be so much of a problem. Mm-hmm. And then on the regulatory side, you know, depending on what side of the fence you're on, it's either really great progress or, you know, you might find it a bit challenging. But I think that overall in that space too, I think we're generally moving in the right direction. And some of the kinks and the challenges of some of the regulation that's been implemented is going to get worked out over the next few years. So I'm very optimistic about where we're going. But I do think, you know, we are in a bit of a challenging time right now, where a lot of actors and stakeholders in the value chain are really, you know, they're coming to grips with everything that's coming down the pike. And in some cases, really kind of struggling to make sense of it. And I recognize,
yeah,
I see that in our customer conversations, you know, truck costs have gone up. So it can feel really daunting and messy right now. I think that's just the nature of the part of the transition that we're in right now. But overall, I'd really like to strike an optimistic tone in terms of how we're working together.
First of all, our February newsletter that we put out, we started it with, these are the best of times and these are the worst of times.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've received tons of feedback on, man, you know, that's exactly right. That's the way we feel. And so I think it's appropriate to your answer. I do think there's a couple of things that's going to pull us through. One is, I think the industry is really understanding what these trucks can do, what the charging can do, and what parts of the market, you know, what market segments is really ready for electrification. So we're not trying to, like a year or 2 years ago, we had a lot of conversations with people about, you really, I can't do 500 miles and you can't charge it in an hour or things like that. So it's a lot more educated. And then I think the other thing is, we're starting to really understand the, difficult to monetize benefits, or these other benefits to these trucks. And I think those two things are kind of going to pull us out of any sort of struggles we're in right now.
Yeah, I think so too. Look, if I think about, and if I look at how our customers are, you know, the customers who have been running with electric fleets, or, you know, partially electrified fleets for, let's say, a year and a half, 2 years or so, what I'm really seeing, Mike, is that the operations teams, they're starting to develop an intuition for how to operate these trucks, right? It was a colleague and I who were recently at an operations center of one of our customers, and you could see the fleet operator kind of saying, hey, can this truck, can it get there, right? It has, you know, 25% charge left. It needs to go here. And you could just tell that just based on his understanding, the intuitive understanding of the fleet, the capability of the vehicle, he was starting to make decisions, right? So it's data-based.
Yep.
But it's starting to become as intuitive for that fleet operator as it is dispatching and running the more conventional fleet. And that was really, really awesome to see,
right?
This real understanding of what the use case is and how you can use these vehicles.
Yeah. And one area that I find really interesting, and the data in the run kind of led us there, is diesels really struggle in, you know, inner city, start and stop, those kind of, it just takes a lot of energy and diesel. And we've heard from fleets say, I was shocked when the truck came back and we had 45% state of charge left. So that's because their mindset around diesel is that the duty cycles are tough. Now you get with regenerative braking and so forth. So, hey, before we go too far, tell us about yourself. And maybe, you know, one or two jobs that prepared you for the challenges you have in your role right now.
I've been working in the energy and mobility space for over 20 years now. And if you look at my resume, I spent 18 years of my career at Shell, which is a long time, much longer than I anticipated it to be when I joined that company. And I joined in a time, early 2000s, when, you know, Shell still had hydrogen and a wind business, retail green electricity. And that's really what I wanted to do at the time. Like, so I've always been kind of mission oriented from that perspective, but it took me a long time, you know, in the 2000s, after I joined Shell in 2003, that whole segment just really cooled off. So it took me until 2013 to get into the clean tech space. And I did that by joining Shell Technology Ventures at the time, moved from the Netherlands to the US to Boston, and was responsible at the time for kind of setting up the clean tech venture side of things. you know, there were five people in the team, 20% of our investments were going to be clean tech. I put my hand up and said, that's what I want to do, which at the time was like not a popular thing to do in a company like Shell. It's what I wanted to do. So that job, I did that for 3 years, allowed me to get to know and understand the broad clean tech industry. So I looked at companies all the way from, you know, distributed storage to hydrogen technologies, et cetera. So that allowed me to really get a sense of what was out there. And so that was a really formative role. It helped me understand, you know, the challenges of starting up new businesses. I was on the boards of a number of early stage venture companies. So that was really formative. And that helped me shape what became a business case for a distributed energy business, which I then moved on to set up and to help others set up in the 2000s. So that was a lot of fun. And out of that came my interest in electric mobility, because I started to see, hey, this distributed energy play, you know, we're going to have a lot of vehicles on the road. They're basically just, you know, they're going to have batteries. That's going to have an opportunity at the grid edge. So that role was really formative. And then I'd say the second role that was really that kind of led me to where I am today was this role at Greenlots. So I led the acquisition of Greenlots, which is an EV charging services software company. So I led that acquisition in 2018 and 19, and then took an operating role there. Really loved it. I loved working with the CEO, Brett Hauser, of Greenlots at the time. And that form, like those two experiences together, you know, kind of led me to think about, hey, how do we now accelerate deployment into the electric mobility space? What's really, really needed? What do customers want? So what I was seeing when I was at Greenlots, now called Shell Recharge Solutions, we were selling software, we were selling projects, but what I really started to see is that I was thinking, well, customers don't really want software per se or a turnkey project. What they want to buy is fuel, right? And that led me to think about, hey, we should really be owning and operating these assets so that we could just simply sell our customers fuel and make it really, really easy for them to transition to electric fleets. So when you're in the B2B space and, you know, you're selling to an electric, to a fleet, to a trucking company or to an e-commerce company, what's the simplest thing that they could buy to help move to an EV? And it's electrons, right?
Yeah.
So that became the thesis of what we're doing here at Prologis Mobility right now, which is, I mean, you could call it charging as a service. You know, folks have different ideas of what that really means, but so that's what we do today. So my fundamental belief still is that in order for us to accelerate, we need to make it really, really simple for fleets to convert. And I think an important aspect of that is ensuring that the infrastructure is there and that fleets can just buy fuel like they're buying diesel today.
Prologis owns a lot of warehouses and real estate and so forth, and you're leading the charge around mobility and electrifying these sites. A question I've been thinking about to ask you is, how do you get started with a site? Is it that you look at it and determine, hey, this is a site that's, you know, maybe it's got electricity, maybe it's in an area where there's some incentives, et cetera. But do you then approach the owner or the fleet, or is it the other way around where it's the fleets and those people who are operating at the site say, I want to go electric, and then contact you? Which scenario is more often, and maybe where do you see that going down the road?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, given that we do have, you know, more than 5,000 facilities globally. What is it, about 3,500 in the U.S.? So there's really two things that we do here, Mike. So on the warehouse side, I'd say we're more customer led, right? So we have a significant portfolio of not just of sites, but of customers. You know, think anyone who's in e-commerce or, you know, logistics, we tend to have in our portfolio, and generally we're the largest landlord of these customers because it's such a kind of fragmented industry, logistics, real estate. So we really start with the customer. We have conversations with the customer. They either have a specific site in mind where they want to introduce electric vehicles, or they have a plan. They've bought, you know, 500 or 1,000 last mile delivery vehicles, and they don't really know yet where to deploy them. Because we have such a large portfolio of locations, we can then, you know, either help customers find sites that are going to be easier to electrify, or if it comes to a specific site that they're looking to electrify, you know, we'll work with them on this is your use cases, what you want to do. We advise on when to charge to avoid, you know, high peak times, demand charges, et cetera. We spec the project, we build it, and then we contract with that customer for the use of that infrastructure and for the offtake of that energy at that location. So I'd say that's a little bit more customer-led. The second pillar here is our hub work. So we are also working on the development of charging locations that are not tied to warehouses. For those, we take a bit more of a site-first approach. Of course, we look to locate those sites in areas where we have customers that we believe are going to transition. Those sites need to be, you know, in good logistics areas, at good corridor locations, and so those are important considerations. There we very much kind of look at the site first. So those are kind of the
Makes
two
sense.
ways that we go about things.
Yeah, do you see a hybrid evolving where an operator at a site would allow other people to come in and charge their trucks at their location? Or is that just too much to ask of security and all kinds of other things?
Yeah, so I very much believe that the network is going to become more open, right? So I look at every project that we build as a node on our network. And even if that's a initially dedicated, you know, private behind the fence deployment for a customer, most of our sites, you think about it, right? If you have a transload or a cross-dock site, it might have, you know, let's say 30, 40, you know, Class 8 electric vehicles, you know, 20 miles from the Port of L.A. Those vehicles are owned and operated by that, you know, by that freight forwarder. But there's other trucking companies visiting that site too, right? So you have, you know, J.B. Hunt, NFI Schneider trucks coming to that location as well. And so I think over time, you know, there's really no reason why those third-party trucks couldn't charge at that location as well. And we're starting to have those conversations with a number of our customers where we've done a dedicated behind-the-fence deployment for their fleet, where they are now seeing that third-party electric trucks are coming to site as well. And hey, why not open up that location for those trucks too? It's really, really good for everybody, right? The higher the utilization of that location, the lower the relative cost of that site will become. I have the view that over time, that's going to really happen. And I think everyone's going to benefit. I think we're going to realize that that's going to drive costs down, right? Because the utilization of these private behind-the-fence deployments, you know, could be a lot higher by enabling that type of third-party charging.
So I want to take just a couple of minutes and talk about Queens, New York, and the Frito-Lay facility there. I mean, we don't need to go into a lot of detail. There's, you know, part of the Run on Less website and a huge video and so forth. But when we first contacted Pepsi about a location outside of California where they were deploying e-transits, Somebody said, well, why don't we do Queens? And then a few others said, oh, no, Queens won't be ready near fast enough. I mean, there's no way that that's going to happen, you know. And then I got a call coming back saying, oh, wait a minute, we want to do Queens. So, you know, we delved into the story a little bit during the video, but tell us a little bit about how that came about so fast. And if I'm not mistaken, you were already doing a lot of site improvement work, so you could just like add scope to it. I know that it never is as easy as I just said it, but tell me about that particular situation.
Yeah, so this is indeed a what's called a last mile, last touch facility in Queens. The trucks operating out of that facility don't do more than, 80-ish or so miles a day. That project was a new lease to a customer. And generally, you know, when you're going into a new lease, that's the moment when you do site improvements. That's a really, really great moment to kind of catch an electric mobility project too, because what we can then do is integrate the site work required for the EV project with the overall site work. And that just leads to lots of cost synergies, which I think is important, because then we can deliver a lower cost charging project, you know, that helps our customers transition faster. And that's kind of what happened here as well. What we love to be able to do is to think about how we can get customers going as quick as possible, even if it is with only a smaller portion of the eventual charging capacity on site. And that's what happened here too. So we were able to install a number of chargers with more limited capacity at that location early on, in parallel to building out the full charging project on the other side of the facility. So it's nearly 60 level 2 chargers, 280 kW higher power chargers. The challenge with that project, as with many of our projects, unfortunately, is the timeline to final energization. But again, fortunately here, we were able to get going pretty quick by installing just a more limited amount of capacity early on in the project, so that Pepsi Freeway could actually get going with some trucks.
Yeah, and you know, the final point on that is that they're able to get rid of a lot of old trucks at that site, go 100% electric in just a couple of years. All new trucks, drivers loving them. It was like Christmas Day, I called it, when, you know, they get to this. And so, you know, NACFI's kind of called that a small energy depot deployment. And it's that's very exciting. For the final 5 minutes, I'd like us to talk about, both of us are serving on the Joint Office Electric Vehicle Working Group, a sort of a volunteer process with other folks. I think over 300 or 400 people applied, and you and I are on it. And I was a little reluctant to get started. I mean, you know, we've got a lot going on. And so, you know, spending a couple of days with, you know, working on electric vehicles, you know, with the government kind of sponsoring an industry group, I was a little worried about just like, you know, what would we gain out of it, as well as also serving. So I do think we do serve there a little bit, but 17 industry members, this is passenger car up through all commercial vehicles. And Congress in, you know, when they funded either the Infrastructure Act or the Inflation Reduction Act, I can't remember, but they set up this group to help the government assess the spending and that they're doing on infrastructure and so forth, as well as sort of guide the future. And four of the 17 are trucking people, you and I and Rakesh from Daimler and Dean from Truck Centers of America. And I'm excited because, you know, it's a room full of real smart people who are working on, you know, really all aspects of this, whether it's the utility side, charging the trucks. There's even a few people on there representing indigenous folks. So, you know, how we do this in a just way. So, you know, you get, once I got in the room, we had our first meeting a couple right before Christmas. And once I got in the room, I'm like, well, how could I not want to be with this group a couple times a year, three times a year? Yeah. So I'm excited to really dig in now. Our next meeting's in April.
Yeah, I agree. Look, it's a real honor to be on that group. And look, I'm a naturalized American citizen, you know, Dutch American. So, you know, for me, it's a real honor to be able to contribute to on that group. And I agree. I think it's a little bit of serving that we're doing there. What I was really happy about in that is that I think it's a very diverse group, and I think they got that right. I'm happy to be able to represent the real estate side, you know, kind of the real estate industry in that discussion, because I think oftentimes that's a little bit overlooked, right? It's like you need to bring together all the players in the value chain to make these projects happen. And, you know, so I'm representing kind of the real estate side there, which is the locations where these trucks are going to charge. And I think if we don't figure out how to encourage, you know, site owners to enable these locations for EV charging, it's going to be a challenge, right? I think, you know, rooftop solar in commercial industrial has in the past been a challenge, because you have this mismatch between the interests of the site owner and a tenant, right? A tenant isn't motivated to install rooftop solar because they're not there long enough. Their lease is 5 to 7 years. You need, you know, 12 to 15 years for a solar project to pay off. The landlord isn't really motivated because electricity is paid for by the tenant anyway. So deployment there hasn't gone as fast as it technically could. That's a possible challenge in this space too. And I'm really passionate about finding ways to crack that nut and to make sure that we have, you know, cost efficient infrastructure available for these fleets to transition. As I said earlier, we need to make it really, really simple for these fleets to transition. The infrastructure just needs to be there. They need to be able to fuel cost effectively. And a lot of that is going to come from, there has to be support from site owners, the real estate industry, to make this happen.
You know, for a while, I was kind of avoiding calling this a transformation, thinking, hey, let's just make sure it's that big. And now I'm learning it is, and some of those points you just made. So, hey, wonderful having you on and having this conversation, Henrik. Look forward to another busy year between Prologis and NACFI. And thanks a lot for joining us today.
Likewise. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Freight Efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rosenfrantz.